Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. You may not be able to tell on your radio or your computer, but this song by the Red Hot Chili Peppers is really loud. By which I don't mean that Anthony Kiedis is singing any more forcefully, nor is Flea suddenly turning up his bass to 11. This is a good example of an ongoing trend in the recording industry in which artists and record companies have been boosting the levels of pop and rock albums, mostly through various engineering bells and whistles applied during the mastering process. Joe Gross is the music critic of the Austin American Statesman. He recently wrote about the loudness wars and joins us by phone from Austin. Joe, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Recently, Bob Dylan told Rolling Stone magazine, quote, "You listen to these modern records, they're atrocious, they have sound all over them. There's no definition of nothing, no vocal, no nothing, just like static." Does he have a point?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it sounded to a lot of people like an old guy just kind of ranting about the kids today. But he has a very good point. When Dylan started making records, there was pop records had a depth of feel that they just don't have anymore. Sound is compressed, squished together in ways that were quite literally unthinkable when he started making records. And the experience of listening to pop radio today is the experience of having a tremendous amount of musical information come at you very, very fast with no real break. And I think that's what he was talking about.
All right. Well, let's define our terms here first, because what we're talking about is the records are not louder in the sense of more volume, right? It's the word that you used, compression.
It's a tough distinction sometimes, because a lot of it does have to do with perception. A lot of it is quite subjective. When we talk about volume, when I'm talking about volume in this piece, I'm talking about the thing that you can control with the knob on your stereo.
Right.
When we're talking about loudness, we're talking about your perception of a particular sound at a particular volume.
So,
which sounds like a fine distinction, but it's the difference between listening to a CD made in 1986 and a CD made in 1996. If you put them both on a 5-disc changer, you'll have to turn up the older CD to hear it at a particular volume, but when the CD changes and you're listening to the newer CD, suddenly that CD will sound incredibly loud. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I guess another example would be television commercials, where the commercials come blaring in when the movie you were just watching was at what you considered to be a perfectly fine volume.
It's exactly the same thing. It's as if every single song on the radio has become an ad and is being projected at you.
Okay.
At the speed and volume of an ad.
So the problem with compression, then, is it literally is compressing or squeezing the audio signal. So the artist thought that these notes should be very, very loud, and those other notes should be very, very soft. When you compress them, they're just moderately loud, moderately soft. Everything's in the middle.
Yeah, compression is almost a misnomer. What you're doing is you're not compressing things to make loud sounds softer. What people do it for is to make softer sounds louder. And there are very specific reasons that people do this, and it's an invaluable tool for people for recording artists and engineers in all stages of the recording process. When it becomes problematic is when the entire song is squished and the average volume of the song is raised higher and higher up,
mm-hmm.
so that the quiet sounds aren't that much different from the loud sounds. There's no depth of field to the recording. Your ear doesn't have any space to play in, and it becomes very exhausting for the listener very quickly.
We're speaking with Joe Gross, music critic of the Austin American Statesman. He's written recently about the loudness wars. I mean, there actually was a memo, Joe, that was circulated around the web from a fellow pretty high up at Sony saying, you know, why are we doing this? Why does everything have to be compressed and mastered so that it's super loud? Why does everything have to be loud?
Well, the memo was written by a guy named Angelo Montrone, who's a vice president for A&R at One Haven Music, which is a division of Sony Music. And what he was talking about was a record by Los Lonely Boys that he was involved in when he was with OR Music. And during the making of that record, he and other people involved at the label level were very specific that they didn't want this record to come blaring at you. They wanted it to be mastered in a way that allowed for a certain depth of field to the music. And I think the impression today among a lot of label people, and frankly among a lot of artists, is that if the record doesn't jump out at you immediately, it has a far smaller chance of becoming a hit. And if anything, this Los Lonely Boys record proved that to be nonsense. The song Heaven was a huge smash, and the album sold 2.5 million copies. And I think that was a really great moment for people who want popular music to return to a state where there is room for the listener to become involved in listening again.
All right, well, here is that song, Heaven, from Los Lonely Boys. All right, so Los Lonely Boys and the song Heaven, a big hit, Joe Gross, despite the fact that the band chose not to follow the current trend towards making the song super loud.
Absolutely, and I think one of the things that people will notice listening to the song on the radio is it sounds terrific on the radio, and part of the reason it sounds terrific on the radio is your radio station, like all radio stations, have a series of compressors and limiters that they use on the music to even out the volume of all the songs that you play. Now, if you feed a song that's already super compressed and super squished into that, it's going to sound like you're being beaten up. But the Los Lonely Boys track has plenty of space, and the compression that's used on it as it goes over the air works really well with the song, and, you know, it was a huge hit. I'm not saying that was the only reason it was a huge hit.
Right.
But it certainly didn't hurt.
Well, let's, for comparison's sake, Christina Aguilera.
Yes.
Right? You look at this song, and you don't see, if you put it on a computer screen, you don't see regular wave forms. You see just like a block.
You see lots of square waves.
Yeah.
Looks like a big brick.
Yeah, right. And this is what it sounds like. Now, Joe Gross, it seems like, from what you've written and what you're saying, that if you listen to this Christina Aguilera record all the way through, that at some point, and perhaps you won't have to be listening too long to reach this point, you will get, you will feel a kind of oral fatigue.
Yeah, I don't think you could actually listen to it all the way through. And that's not to pick on Christina Aguilera. I happen to like that song. I like Ain't No Other Man, but you put it on, and then you put on the CD, and you get three songs in, and you're just exhausted. And part of the reason for that is the brain simply can't process sounds that lack a dynamic range for very long. You literally can't do it. It's for the same reason that you can't listen to a fire alarm for particularly long. It's just one tone.
Mm-hmm.
There's no space for your brain to gather purchase. And, you know, you listen to two or three songs like that back to back, and your brain starts involuntarily telling you, I got to turn this off.
Yeah.
And the shame is that, you know, a lot of consumers are buying these records and they're putting them on and they're enjoying the music, or at least they think they are, and then they want to take the CD off and they don't really know why. And that's just, you know, it's insane, really.
And yet, if you're listening on an iPod and you're in your car and you've got the iPod going through the car speakers and there's traffic going on, you'll sort of be grateful for that compression, won't you?
Yeah, it'll sound okay and you won't notice it. And I think that's a lot of what this boils down to is lifestyle issues. We listen to music very differently now than we listened to music 20 or even 10 years ago. We're on the go, we're in cars, we're out jogging. Folks in New York, if they're listening to their iPods while they're jogging, they have to compete with a tremendous amount of background noise. And so the songs are mixed and compressed in a way that sounds punched through that background
right.
noise. So you get the shape of the song. You don't necessarily get the detail, but you know what you're listening to, and you can listen to it while you're jogging or in the car or on the subway.
So, I mean, you know, there is certainly a use, a very good use for compression, but as with everything else, it's a matter of degree, and we've been talking about the degrees to which music has been squelched and squished recently with Joe Gross, music critic of the Austin American Statesman. There's a link to his article, Everything Louder Than Everything Else, on the Soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. Joe, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Tomorrow on Soundcheck, composer Steve Reich. He may be hipper at age 70 than he was at age 30, influencing DJs, electronic artists, and choreographers. Tomorrow is his 70th birthday. And the Brazilian Girls. They're not Brazilian, and there's only one girl in the group, but this electro-world pop band still captures the feeling of carnival. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. Our program was engineered today by Rob Christensen and produced by Brian Wise and Allison Lichter. Our senior producer, Gisele Regatow. Our executive producer, Chris Bannon. We had help today from Jesse Teresi. I'm John Schaefer. Join us tomorrow for the next Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.